to another episode of Mandatory Music and CD, the show where three friends sit around and go through an album track by track to discuss the music that shaped our lives. And so here we are. It's the first week of April. It's spring wherever you are, or unless you're down under, then it's not. It's fall where you are, but the weather should be fine regardless. So hello, welcome, and we're here. It was Dave's pick, and we are going all the way back, to 1993's Smashing Pumpkins' Siamese Dream, which, of course, you can see because it's right in the title there. So I'm not here alone. Of course, I don't do the show alone. Three friends. First up is and again, I'm going to keep saying it. I'm going to, you know how you say you manifest it and you make it true? Bolton's favorite son, Max Byrne, is here. Hello, Max.
Hello. It's better than Bolton's bastard son, so I'll take that. Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
I'm great. I'm ready to discuss this interesting album. Yeah, this should be a good one.
It will be an interesting conversation. I think we're all coming at it with three totally different points of view, so it should be not necessarily divisive, but fun. And the man who picked it, everybody's favorite bass player, Dave. Honestly, if you were in this band, you might have. They need this band's always on the hunt for a bass player.
They'd have done all right, wouldn't they?
Dave, how are you, Dave?
I'm good, thank you. Completing the battle of the bastards, I guess. I don't know if I'd have got on with Corgan any better than she did, but I think it's an interesting band, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. And we will discuss. They're from Chicago. Darcy's actually from a town that's not far from where I am from. I used to go to South Haven, Michigan all the time. If I were to ever to move back to Michigan, that's where I would go. I really love South Haven. It is a beautiful, beautiful place. That's where Darcy's from. I also understand why she moved to Chicago from there. Her being her, I'm like, that's not a place for you, ma'am. So they're a Chicago-based band. This is the 1993 release. It was their second full album produced by Butch Vig, legendary producer. We are back, baby, with a producing king, Butch Vig, also of Garbage fame. For those of you who don't know, he's in the band Garbage. That Garbage is Shirley Manson and three producers. That is, they're a really good band. This was a divisive recording session, it seems, during all of this. So we'll get into some of that. I think some of that comes through in different tracks. So we'll discuss that. The entire album was written by Billy Corgan, who is the singer and rhythm guitarist, with James Iha on lead guitar, Jimmy Chamberlain on drums, and Darcy Wazurski on bass. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see if maybe that is actually her on bass. So we'll come to Dave last. So I'll give just a little brief story. My Smashing Pumpkins story is I've seen them three times in concert. One at a small the Detroit Fairgrounds, in between Gish and Siamese Dream coming out. That's when I saw them. So they were playing some of these songs, but nobody'd really heard of those songs yet. And then I saw them at a hockey rink in Kalamazoo, Michigan, maybe a year later. And then a couple of years later, they headlined Lollapalooza. The problem for them is they had to go on after George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars and the Beastie Boys. And so they were really angry. They should not have been the headliners, but they're them. So they were the headliners, but everybody was like, you guys are just standing around arguing on stage. And we just saw the Beastie Boys and George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars. So this is no good. So each of their shows got progressively worse. I haven't seen them since 1994, I guess. So that is my Smashing Pumpkins story. Max Byrne, Smashing Pumpkins. What do you know? How do you feel?
They're not a band I'm a massive fan of. This kind of music, for want of a better word, it's not really something that I listen to with any great gusto. I'm not really a big fan of alternative, in inverted commas, rock, or shoegaze, as some people like to call it. It's not really my jam, shall we say. But how can you not be aware of them? When I was a teenager, a couple of my closest friends were very much into them. So I kind of had to listen by osmosis. And my better half, Sarah, is a huge fan. She's seen them a bunch of times back in the day. She's a year younger than me, so she was a fan back in the 90s. So I'm very much the sort of present in my life without being front and center in my life. And certainly this album I'd never given it the time of day until Dave suggested this was this. My relationship with the album started when Dave said, "This is what we're going to do."
Sir, and
my
this is week five. With the album,
yeah, my relationship with the album will finish when you stop pressing record. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. So it was something a bit different for me. It's not my cup of tea, but I certainly appreciate the band's success and longevity, and you know, being a big wrestling fan as well, Billy Corgan's, like, you know, he owns his own wrestling company in America, NWA, so much respect to him for that. And I like listening to him talk wrestling. That's his voice, there is more bearable than when he sings, but we'll get into that. But yeah, interesting album, shall we say.
Nice. Dave, if you heard that, some of Max's best friends are Smashing Pumpkins fans.
I know, yeah.
So that's you fit in that, you fit in there. So tell everybody why you picked this album in your Pumpkin history.
So to be honest, I wouldn't even class myself as a massive Smashing Pumpkins fan, because that would imply that you like all of the albums, and I think I missed the boat on them slightly. So this album came out 93. I remember I moved away from home and went to uni in 94. Now, when I was at home, I mean, at that time, I was listening to a lot of Iron Maiden, Guns N' Roses, Skid Row, Faith No More, Jimi Hendrix. Those were my staples. And it was only going to university that you get exposed to lots of different sort of music. And I think I would have heard Smashing Pumpkins, especially at Monday night down at Arabella's, 70p a pint it was. And it was for rock night. And so I remember hearing all these kind of different alternative tracks. It was huge in 94, wasn't it? Alternative. I remember Cannonball. It was always played there.
The Breeders. They were at that Lollapalooza.
That Breeders, that checks out.
The Breeders were put on a much better and more fun show than did Smashing Pumpkins.
I just remember, you know, especially in the, you know, you have to, on the dance floor, you have to do the whole guitar action, play your guitar and stuff. So I think I just missed out really on getting into these. And it became a band that I was aware of the name without actually listening to any of the music. And I think it feels like whenever I caught them on like MTV or something like that, it was always something like Disarm. You know, it was always something softer, and it just looked all, I want to choose the right word, a bit self-indulgent. And I just thought, I'm not interested in this at all. And then it was probably around, let me think, about 2006, 2007. And I'd been doing the originals stuff. That I was on the Manchester Unsigned circuit for a while. And the guitarist there, that band was coming to a close and we were starting off a new project. And my mate, Sir, who's the guitarist, it was for my birthday one year, and he basically gave me a whole bunch of copied CDs of albums that he really loved. So it was kind of part present and part, I think he was trying to influence me. But I kind of went through, there was this one, there was the album after this, is it Melancholy or whatever the one after this is, and a whole bunch of other things. I remember I worked in Liverpool at the time. It used to take me an hour there and an hour back, at least. If there was traffic on the Runcorn Bridge, I was stuffed, more like 2 hours. And this is the time when I'd graduated from a tape deck to a CD in the car. And so I could actually choose some CDs, you know, when you're flying down the motorway with one hand and you're trying to change your CD.
Totally safe. Totally
safe.
Yeah,
totally. Not on the phone, though. And I just remember putting this on and those three tracks, and bearing in mind when you're in the car, you know, a big sort of petrol guzzling car flying down the motorway, you've got a lot of sound, so you need something quite loud to break through, you know, the sounds that are going on around you. And I just remember, you know, this album just got me through those long motorway days, to be honest. And I just, it was one of those, so like I say, about at least a decade, probably a decade and a half after it came out, that was when I experienced it. So if I listen to this album, it kind of transports me back to the mid to late 2000s. And yeah, it was just the power of it. And it was the combination of not necessarily the notes, not necessarily the rhythms, but the tone of everything. You know, the feel and going from way up high in terms of intensity to way down low, and that kind of dynamic element to it. So and like I say, I've tried the other albums, and none of them have quite hit me the way this one has.
That's all totally fair. So obviously, that has said, during the, so you were coming at that when the Darcy was not invited to the reunion tour, but when
apparently, yeah.
Shocking. but when James came back and Jimmy came back on drums, did you happen to go see that reunion tour? Have you ever seen them?
No. I mean, let me think. My eldest was born in 2005, so in terms of my social life, there's probably a 15-year gap there.
Yes, there is. As we all know, as men with children, yes, you're like, oh, there's that time where you're like, huh, I don't know what you're talking about. You're like, it was the number one movie for 6 years. You're like, was it? I missed it somehow. Yeah,
it's
right,
new
for sure.
To me.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, but I think that's the joy of doing this show, right? So I was there in the teeth of it, listening to the Pumpkins. I really did like Gish. I thought Gish was a fantastic album. And again, I'm from the Chicagoland area. My dad's from Chicago. Darcy's from right a town literally that I used to go to. Go watch them. There's like this old timey movie theater there. It's in South Haven. That's amazing that you can actually just, they're one of the few places that you can just walk in and there's like a person who sells popcorn. There's a window to the street. So you don't even have to go in if you just want to buy movie theater popcorn. it's a crazy place. So like I'm familiar with them, like they were a localish band for me, you know, growing up, because I graduated high school in 91, so like I knew who they were, not like I knew who they were, but you know, like they were a localish band for me.
Yeah,
so it's just interesting. So we're coming at it from these three different perspectives, and obviously, you know, Max with Sarah having listened to them, and they were ubiquitous. They were on The Simpsons. If you made it to The Simpsons, right, you've made it. But it's, so I think this should be a fun way to look at. But the thing that I love about the show, right, is that this is it. If somebody's going to listen to this, here we are all experiencing music. Like I said out loud, like I was genuinely thrilled with Paranoid. I was not expecting to love it like I did. And I went in, you know, because I thought I knew. And so, yeah. And you know, and sometimes you're like, oh, I didn't. Last week we did Weezer and you guys didn't love it. I'm so glad we did it, because you know this is fun. So I'm really excited to see where we go. So again, this is a 62-minute album that came out from Virgin. It won a ton of awards. They actually ended up releasing 5 singles off of this: Cherub Rock, Today, Disarm, Rocket, and Mayonnaise. So between 1993 and 95, they released all of these singles. Well, actually, the thing I'm looking at says Mayonnaise was released as a single in 2023. This is why you don't trust Wikipedia people, because that's obviously wrong. So anyway, so here we go. We are going to go dig right in again. All songs written by Corrigan, except for Soma and Mayonnaise, co-written by James Iha, who I'm a big fan of. And I can't wait for us to dig into Iha's guitar playing. I think this should be fun. So song one. Cherub Rock, which comes in at a strong 4 minutes, 58 seconds. Max, do you feel cherubic? Does this make you smile? Does this make you want to shoot somebody in the ass with an arrow? Are you that kind of cherub?
I'm glad you said an arrow.
yeah. Well, you know, listen to this album too many times, anything could happen. I mean, that intro, that very first bit of intro, it very much reminds me of Don't Stop by Red Hot Chili Peppers, which obviously this predates that by about 10 years or something, doesn't it? But that very like staccato guitar with the little sort of almost military drum beat there, that just reminds me of that, actually. I first heard it and thought, oh, all right. Well, I think the drumming is excellent on it. I think the drumming is excellent full stop on the album. I think he's a brilliant drummer, Jimmy Chamberlain. I think he, to my ears anyway, not being a super fan, but to me, he's the standout player on this album, you know, musician-wise. I think he's really good. I think this is one of the better songs on the album, for sure. It's a good opener because it does stick in your head. You know, and obviously it was a good single as well. So you can see why they went with it as the opening track. I like the heavy riff as well that kicks in just before the solo. There's like this heavy riff that's a bit different to the rest of the song, and I quite like that as well. I mean, I'll say it now. I do find Billy Corgan's voice hard work. it's a bit like Geddy Lee out of Rush. I mean, I adore Rush, but Geddy Lee's voice is total Marmite, isn't it? You either love it or hate it. And Billy Corgan's voice, although it doesn't sound like Geddy Lee, I have the same kind of sensation. There's times where his voice sounds nice, and when he's doing like the more quiet, intimate songs, he has like a kind of breathy voice, and that's quite good. But when he's like rocking out, it's a bit nails down a chalkboard to me, you know. But I appreciate his talent. Christ, it's undeniable. So yeah, it's a good song. It would be wrong of me to say it's not. It stands out. It does remind me, like Dave was saying about, you know, his student days in the old rock club there. It reminds me of the same thing in the late 90s, being in the corporation in Sheffield when I was a student up there, and stuff like this was always on when we used to go midweek with my mate Chris. So good song, actually. I do quite like this song.
Nice. Look at that, we started off with a bang. Dave, Chair Brock.
It's all downhill
from here.
Oh. It could be. You never know.
No, I love the opening. We always say, don't we, you start with a banger, and for me, this is right up there. I like the kind of change in the rhythm and the change in the tone. Like, everyone comes in at a slightly different time. You kind of have that guitar. Well, actually, it's the drums that start off first, but it's just almost like an intro. And then you have the guitar with this interesting, and for me, it's like a driving kind of rhythm to it. You have the guitar coming in, and then the drums almost mimic the rhythm of what the guitar is playing, and then you have the bottom part, the bass coming in. But it's when that wall of sound just hits you, this massive distorted guitar sound, and it's just, oh, it just makes you feel great. And when everything comes together then, and it all hits the beat, and it drops into that rhythm, into that verse. And then I definitely hear the thing about Corgan. He's not got a typical, I don't know, I can't think of another voice like his. It's so distinctive.
That's unique, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
yeah. And I like the fact that it isn't this powerful rock voice. You know, it's not like, it's certainly nothing like Bruce Dickinson or anything, but it's just an interesting contrast, because you've got almost this little voice in this huge booming wall of sound. And I think it's a great song. Absolute great start. And I'll show my hand initially. For me, it's the first three tracks of this album that are all absolute bangers. You know, they're proper, the intensity is really, really high. And it's only after that, you know, it'll drop down a bit. But yeah, Cherub Rock, big thumbs up for me for an opener.
Nice. Yeah, and I feel like that'll be interesting, because I have actually done some back of the napkin rearranging of the tracks, like we did with Hotel California. So that'll be interesting, because So Butch Vig is the producer, but Billy Corgan is listed as co-producer. So I feel like Billy Corgan is the Gen X Lindsey Buckingham. He's a genius who's a huge fucking pain in the ass. And he drives producers crazy. Like Ken Calais infamously wanted to, he said out loud, he's produced tons of people. He says the two people he loves to work with but also hates to work with are Lindsey Buckingham and Paul McCartney, because they just want to fucking produce it themselves. And he's like, then just fucking produce it. Don't bring me in. And I feel like there's a lot of that going on. And I feel like this is the song that Butch said. Like, I think the singles are the songs where Butch is like, stand down, let me do this. And some of the other tracks, like maybe track 11, when we get there, was like Billy, like, no, watch, let me do this thing. So to me, this comes together. I like the way that you described it. I think that's very true. The thing about the voice is that I think it's Billy's voice that makes them an alternative band. They're a rock band with an alternative voice singer, like unique voice. Like the reason that the U2, like when a kid who's a Gen Xer, it was like U2 or REM, which one's going to last? Well, it was U2, because U2's a rock band and REM's an alternative band. Michael Stipe's voice isn't as good as Bono's voice. You can, whatever you want to say about them as bands, Michael Voice has this unique kind of whine to his voice where Bono's singing rock songs. Billy Corgan, like Pavement, the band Pavement, I think of a lot. They're like, musically, they're a lot of good, but that voice, Okay, Steve Malcolm's voice is what it is, you know? So, and that's okay because they're an alternative band. So I do think it's Billy's voice that makes them alternative. I think they're a rock band with an alternative voice singer. So I think this Cherub Rock, it's called Cherub Rock, it tells you what it is. It's trying to convince you that they're a rock band because musically they are. But I do think what I agree with both of you that there's some things about his voice. And plus, he looks like Uncle Fester. And so there's
Yeah, he
also
does,
there's
yeah.
that, right? There's that you can't help but think of Uncle Fester screeching this song too. No, it is a good opener. I actually, when we get there, I actually have a different song that I think should have been the opener and my great rewrite of the song. So I'll make sure I get to that. So Cherub Rock, again, good. I'm with you guys. I get why it's a single. And there we go. And so song two is called Quiet. It's 3:41. There's that distortion. And this is one thing in our Discord, Max was saying it kind of felt like the songs were blending together a little. And so as I was listening through this last week, taking my notes, you know, so like when we do this, I love that part right there a lot though. Whatever the mythology is, whether it's him on the bass or Darcy on the bass, I love the bass in Quiet. To me, that's the best part of Quiet is the bass line. But I think this is it, Max. It's the and I will question you both. Is it because of that distortion? Is that what makes it seem like the same? Because when I listened to it, when I was taking my notes, I felt like, oh, this is what Max was getting at. It's these first two songs and then songs four and five that kind of start and end the same, that it feels that way. Is that what you say, Max?
I just think musically a lot of the songs sounded very similar. That's all. I mean, it's not a knock. So many bands are like that anyway. So many bands have that sound, and a lot of their songs on albums sound very much like the same song, just slightly tweaked and that. And I think it's because I was coming to this album completely cold and not being that familiar with it at all before I listened to it, so I didn't have that prior knowledge of certain songs being embedded in my head already. So I think coming to it as a complete outsider, I kind of listened to them and thought that I can't differentiate between, I've listened to the album in full rather than a song here and a song there from start to finish each time I've listened to it. And sometimes you're thinking, this sounds like a song I heard 5 songs ago. I'm probably just nitpicking really, but that was like sort of my initial impression of it.
Yeah. So what do you think of then Quiet? Do you think it differentiates itself enough from Cherub Rock?
Oh yeah, from that one,
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I do like the song. I like that, like you just saying that start there. I like that nice heavy repetitive riff at the start. It's really good, so you can bang your head to a bit. It's quite a good juxtaposition of like really heavy music with his soft voice, shall we say. So I kind of like you just said it beforehand, where you were saying that it's a rock band with a slightly more alternative singer rather than the two styles going together. But I think it works quite well in this song. Again, the drumming's great in the song as well. You get star turn of the album again, I'm repeating myself. But I do think the song is quite stock, this particular song. Other than that great intro, I think it's not one of the standout tracks for me of the album.
Totally fair, Dave, but Dave disagrees.
I mean, I showed my hand earlier, didn't I?
Yeah.
But I think the three songs for me are banging. They just get you up. They get the adrenaline pumping. I think that intro is, again, it's a very driving song. You've got that kind of upward progression, haven't you? As Max said there, I said earlier, to come in with that quiet, that really soft vocal. And it's not just his vocal, it's the effects. And like I say, for me, this album is full of really interesting tones and textures. It's not just about the notes necessarily being played. It's about how everything kind of melts together. But yeah, I think this is on, not quite on par with Cherub Rock, but I do think it is up there. And what I'd just say as well, the thing about it all sounding the same, I think a lot of that comes from lack of familiarity with any album and any genre. So I've heard it multiple times for different bands. You might say, oh, someone might say, oh, Metallica, it all sounds the same, or I don't know, Oasis sounds all the same, Radiohead sounds all the same. But it's like, if you actually listen to it, they are different. However, what I would say is, I think those big booming distorted guitars, I think the tone of those is quite similar on quite a few of the tracks, and Corgan's voice as well. So his like vocal is really the through line through the whole album. So even though I think musically there's a lot changes between the different songs, I totally get it. If you're coming in new, that then it will just stop. Especially if I do it, if I'm coming into an album that I don't know, I think I probably said it with the
You
Weezer
did.
album.
You
And
did.
I did massively have Stockholm Syndrome, by the way, for the next week or so. I just couldn't get the album out of my head. And I'm like,
Amazing.
for fuck's sake.
I'm all for that.
So yeah, I think it's a, I think Quiet is a, another banger, but I totally get it if people think otherwise.
Yeah, no, and I'm with again. So for me, it was just like as I was thinking about it, and so I won't repeat myself, but I do feel like the end of Cherubrock and the beginning of Quiet were a little. I mean, not that bassline, but like that, like you said, the distorted, just the big distorted guitars. I think for me, the standout tracks in this album to show my hand are the ones that aren't that, are the ones that show what a great band they are. Because I agree, Max, the star in the rock songs are Jimmy. He's the fucking
Yeah,
star. Because it's hard
he's
to
very good.
discern. It's hard to discern between Iha and Billy's playing when your rhythm guitarist and your lead guitarist kind of sound like they're making. And again, I know that's part of the production where the bass line is really, standing out. But then in the slower songs, which something is about to happen, and it's not this is like an interesting produced song. This is probably the biggest hit off of this album. One of the, I would say, most misunderstood songs was that a bunch of children in America used this as their prom theme in 1993. I'm like, wait, did you listen to the or 19? It would have been 94, like spring of 94. I'm like, maybe that was a bad choice on your part. Maybe you should listen to the lyrics. So we'll make that move into track three today, by Billy Corgan, 319. Definitely the singlest single on this album. I mean, that is an iconic intro, Dave, right? Talk about that.
Is. I mean, I think for this one, you know what? I'm gonna say it almost is one of those tracks that I think I might have heard a few too many times, and I think this is undoubtedly one of those anthems, isn't it, for Smashing Pumpkins? I think this is, if not the most popular song that people will recognize. And I can see it in my mind's eye, the video where he's in the ice cream sort of truck, and the intro literally does sound like that, doesn't it? It sounds like an ice cream truck, and so you can see where they got that idea. What I think this one explores a little bit more is, again, you have that intro coming in with that very simple guitar riff, but then the big booming guitars. But then when it drops to the verse, this time it drops really down low. In turn, it's just very, very soft. It's not just the vocals that are soft; it's everything. And that's one of the things that I love about this album is just how it goes. Between those different parts of the range, that doesn't make sense. Those different dynamics, and this is the first time I think you hear it, but undoubtedly one of the most popular songs off the album. I think for me though, just I've heard it a few too many times, so I prefer the previous two songs, which is probably sacrilege to a Smashing Pumpkins fan, but
Well, or maybe
that's
not,
me.
because like you said, this was their biggest hit. This is the song that not like, and we'll come to Max. Who some of his favorite fans are Smashing Pumpkins fans. This one you knew, right? This is the one that like when you got to this one, you'd heard this before, this song.
I think I'd heard it before. I couldn't say for sure. That quiet intro reminds me of another song, but I can't quite put my finger on it. I don't know what it is. I'd have that that opening bit. That's what I wrote down. Quiet intro reminds me of something, but it's really annoying me. If it come to me at some point in like a month's time
Send
or
us a
something like
message.
this,
Send us a
in a
message and tell us
fever
what it is.
dream, it'll
Yeah,
come
right.
to you.
In
You'll
the
wake up
middle of the night, we'll get a
screaming.
message from Max.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's quite a good song. It's a nice bit of a lighter shade after two heavy songs. You know, it's well placed on the album after you've come out with two balls out songs to bring it down a little bit quieter, a little bit more melodic. I mean, it's got that kind of really well-worn formula of a quiet verse with a heavy, loud chorus. I mean, that's, you know, so many people do that and still do that. It's kind of like songwriting 101, I suppose. But it's, yeah, it's an okay song. It's quite nice. It's quite short and sweet as well at 3 minutes 19. It doesn't outstay its welcome. There's a bit, the guitar, some of the, and we, I was listening to it last night with Sarah, and I was saying, like, what does that guitar, not the intro, but later, it reminds me of something. And it was a song that came after this by a year or two, and it probably was a non-event in America. But do you remember, Dave, there was a one-hit wonder in the UK in the mid-90s, a band called Stiltskin, who had a hit with that song Inside.
Ah, surely it wasn't just the UK, though. That was huge. Wasn't it?
Yeah. No. It was on a Levi's advert, wasn't it? It was on a Levi's ad.
I used to play that in one of my old bands. And the lyrics are utter bonkers. Just nonsensical lyrics. But yeah, that was a great track.
Yeah, there's a bit... I had a very short stint playing drums in a rock band in sixth form, and this was part of our repertoire, and I fucking hated it. But, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. But yeah, it just reminds me of that. If you get a chance, Tony, go and listen to it.
I will. Yeah, I'm writing it down.
It was literally like their one hit in the UK. It was a number one as well. Number one in the main singles chart. It was huge for about 5 or 6 weeks. And
it was not a cover of Van Halen's Inside.
No. It's an original song. But the guy who was a singer in Stiltskin, Ray Wilson, a Scottish singer, replaced Phil Collins as a lead singer of Genesis for one album. In like 97, 98, they did one studio album with this guy, and it died on its ass and like didn't
Shocking.
Sell. And the tour didn't sell. And then they reunited with Collins like 10 years later or something. But yeah, it just reminds me of that a little bit. But maybe I'm dreaming. I don't know.
Nice. All right. No, that's fair. I don't know that. So, I mean, again, this is, you guys have said it. This is iconic. Again, my concern was there were a lot of children, you know, who are slightly a few years younger than me, having this as their theme for their prom. I'm like, and again, this is a song about contemplating suicide. You're missing just because you got to get past the first four lyrics, first four words of the song. But I do. I mean, I didn't get sick of it. There's a handful of songs that are like that. I actually have just written a short story about overplaying songs and like songs that can kind of become, you become like an atheist to a song because it's been played so much. Like I refuse to listen to that song again. I know that people think it exists, but not for me. This wasn't one of those. I do think it's not my favorite song on the album, but I get it. I get the hookiness. And again, and I'm going to say it again with Disarm. I'm going to say it with, you know, Mayonnaise. I mean, like I can see where Butch Vig took over, and this was a Butch Vig track all day long. Not that he wrote it, but that he was like, stand down, would you like to make some money? Yes, let me do my job. So yeah, that's today. So track four, Humming Along, starts with this sound. It's just under 7 minutes.
Number nine.
Yeah, number I'm nine. Gonna go, this is the and this does not work for me. It takes too long to start. Overproduced, self-indulgent was the word you used earlier, Dave, and I was like, ooh, I've got two songs to say that about. This is one of them. And again, a stark contrast between a song that I think clearly Butch Vig took over and a song that Billy Corgan took over. Listen, that's nice. It just took too long to get there and it doesn't know how to end. So that's my feeling on Hummer. Max, what do you think? Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm right.
It's a 7 minute long hummer. Does sound like a dream, doesn't it? But this song really isn't quite that. I mean, I think it's about 3 minutes too long, if I'm being honest. It meanders a little bit too much for me, you know. It's very easy on the ear, apart from that intro, that kind of weird intro, which I find is really hard to listen to, but other than that, it's quite nice. I mean, there's an instrumental section at the end which could have been edited if they'd have chopped that off and made it a much more concise sort of 4 minute, you know, 4 to 5 minute song, and chopped a couple of minutes off the end with that instrumental section, then it would have been a lot less, like you said, self-indulgent. It's okay. To me, it's nothing special. I think it reminds me of that awful Foo Fighters album we did a few months ago.
It does,
where,
right?
where they really needed some self-editing. I think this song is one of those where they needed to say, look, we, you know, although we don't like to edit ourselves, we really need to be harsh and trim the fat off this particular song. So yeah, I struggled with it a little bit, if I'm honest.
You know, it's funny that Dave mentioned the move from, you know, cassettes to CDs, right? And this, and yeah, while that was happening for you in your car, people were making the move from cassettes to CDs around this, like, and their homes too. And so this is 6208, the whole album. Whereas, you know, like cassettes, it's better if you could keep it at 60 or less. You could do 30 minutes per side. So again, it's also like self-indulgent, like, huh, like Roger Corman's nightmare, you know, because Roger Corman would like cut a movie so it could fit on three reels. You know, if it was, if it was 89 minutes, it had to go onto a fourth reel and he couldn't have that, right? So that's why some of his we'll pretend that's why his movies don't make sense. But I felt like this was like, oh well, it's CD, the space is unlimited, we can kind of do whatever we want, you know, type thing. So that's how I feel about it too. So that's, so anyway, Dave, you said the first three tracks are the bangers, so you, I don't know, does that mean that this is where you it stubs its toe?
So I think it's a little bit of a step down, but I still appreciate its place on the album. I don't think there's a bad track on this album at all. I think this is the first song I said about today really dropping down that intensity. But I really like the way this starts. Not that first, whatever that mad kind of white Beatles white album experimentation is, but after that, it's the first time when really you're separating out the bass. The bass has got that groove going on, and then you've got that very simple but distorted guitar, you know, very simple lick over the top. I think it's quite good. And actually, about the 4:35 mark, when it actually drops down, I kind of love that bit. I think it's been a very intense song up until that bit, and then it just changes almost into another song, Black Sabbath style. So, you know, I kind of appreciate that part of the song. So I think I can go with it could have been less. But what I'd say about the Foo Fighters, like, they'd have a 7-minute song, and then it's like, but why? You didn't do anything with it. You didn't do anything with the luxury at that time. You just played the same stuff for seven minutes. Whereas this, like I say, it's about four and a half minutes. It just changes and it goes into this really soft, quieter song. So I kind of like it. I don't think it's as good as the previous three tracks, but I think it's interesting on its own.
That's fair. That's very fair. So, and again, this is why we have the conversation. I hear that. I definitely think it could have, because I wrote, it took a while to get going. So if it had just maybe started with that bit, like come in hot with that bass, I'm here for that. I love that. And I do think, I mean, what I'm going to say is that having seen them live three times, Darcy is a fantastic bass player. And so to me, to argue that all of this on the album is Billy Corgan doing it, and he sometimes says that he did it and sometimes he says he didn't, and they both gone back and forth, so it's a mythology, and Jimmy Chamberlain was so stoned he doesn't know what happened. Imagine how good he would have been if he had been clean. Good God. But but all of that to say, this bass, the bass on this album is amazing. She is a really good bass player live, and I think they're a better live band. I feel like they're so overproduced on some songs, this song in particular. Sometimes you're just like doing too much in the studio, that when you just get out there and there's four of you making noise, you're having, and yeah, you've got your distortion pedals and all that stuff on there to help during the thing, you know, like, but I think that's how I feel. And it's almost like the bigger they got, the more shit they could add to their lives. By the time they're headlining Lollapalooza, a lot of the noise could be on the live show, or when you see him at the fucking Detroit fairgrounds, you know what I mean? Like, you're bringing in your own amps. So that's not, you're not getting any of that. So anyway, this is the song that really made me realize, like, oh God, they're so good live. And maybe, you know, that, and that's not always the case. Some people are better recorded because their voices are bad. So,
you know, I would say just, sorry to cut across. So I think this one, more than a lot of the others, does feel a bit like a jam. And I hear what you're saying about the overproduced sound, But I could just imagine, say, Corgan comes in with the basic kind of song arrangement, the structure and everything. But I can absolutely see why Darcy would think, well, I've definitely played a part to that, because he wouldn't have written that bass line. That's playing a massive part in laying down that whole groove and feel for the track. So for me, it is difficult to imagine just the way how bands operate. You don't often get someone who's going to write everyone's parts for them. You'll come in and you, like I say, you'll have maybe the chord structure, the lyrics and everything all figured out, but you're reliant on the band to bring their musicianship to the table and really add the context and the texture to that song as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said. Appreciate that. So, track 5, 406 is called Rocket. This one, they use this introduction feeling, I think, in a lot of their songs. Like, this is a, like, you hear this, if you didn't know it was Smashing Pumpkins, this is kind of that, like, Pumpkin-esque comes from this. Lyrically, I think this is one of my favorite songs. I Shall Be Brave. Just this is where he kind of lets himself scream a little. So Max, I know you're not a big super fan of the voice. I feel like this is where the lyrics and the voice really work together for me here. What do you think? Rocket.
Well, first I thought it might be a cover of Rocket by Def Leppard, so I was very excited.
But, of course.
but it wasn't to be. It is what it is. I mean, it's an okay song. It like. Instrumentally, it sounds a bit like a song by the Charlatans called North Country Boy at the start. And then it sounds like someone else as well, but I can't quite put my finger on it. I mean, it's an okay song. There's some nice guitar work on there. I do like that. But it's very much of its time, I would say. It definitely sounds like a song from the mid-90s. Well, that's what it is, isn't it? So it's bound to. But it really does sound like so much stuff from that time. I mean, it's perfectly pleasant, but again, I found it a bit to be like track two, quiet for me personally. I don't mean musically it was anything like it, Christ no, but just in terms of the feeling I got after it, feeling like that was quite, I don't know, it just doesn't stick in my memory so much. But yeah, I can't slag it off too much. It's okay is the best I can give it, I would say.
Okay. From a resounding okay, Dave Aurex, what say you about Rocket?
Yeah, so I think this one, again, it's not one of the better tracks, but I like how, again, it has almost an Eastern influence. And I actually think Hummer had a little bit of an Eastern influence in different parts as well. So I think this, yeah, this one does play with that a little bit more, and again, I think it was the Beatles' Revolver album where they really kind of
so
played
nice.
Around with those different sitar sounds, and here you don't have any sitars, but he's playing that kind of or those kind of Eastern notes, if you like, on the track. So yeah, a bit of a drop down in overall quality, but again, I think because of the guitar tone, I do think the bass on this one stands out as well. You know, again, it's doing something a bit different, whereas when they all kind of come together and they're basically playing the same thing, the bass gets lost a little bit. But yeah, another solid track for me, but within the context of this album.
That's totally fair. That's totally fair. Like I said, to me, lyrically, I think it's these songs are up and down lyrically. I love this one. And I just think to me, the way that the lyrics and his voice work together, it almost feels, I mean, I know the music is happening and I behind it, but it feels like this could have been like, Mother, but John Lennon's Mother, you know, where he just screamed like the scream therapy.
Yeah.
That's what this feels like to me. That's that. It's like he's just really letting this bad voice, as it were, kind of work. So that's what I like about it too. So up for the next big hit. This was, I think, as far as the singles go, to me, this is a better single than Today. Like, again, Today is an infinitely playable. I think this is just such a beautifully complex song. The bells, playing bells in the song. You get a chance to hear his voice.
Not cowbell.
Here. No, not necessarily cowbell. But yeah,
more cowbell.
More cowbell. Yeah. So, what do you think of this arm? Was this on overplay for you? Because this, you must have heard of this one too, Dave. Like you said, you knew you'd heard today, but did this arm make it big over there too?
It was quite big, and I just remember the video, and I don't think I ever. I don't know. Sometimes you can be a right judgmental prick at times, can't you? I just remember seeing the
that's what this show
video,
is.
The video and just thinking,
three judgmental pricks.
Right, that's what it should be. Yeah. No,
was it three men in a boat, or what was the what's the book? Three judgmental pricks. But yeah, I just remember seeing the video. And how they're all dressed up and stuff. I'm like, oh, fuck off. Like, I'm not into this pretentious shit. So I'd have obviously heard the song, but again, it wasn't enough to pull me in. The other stuff pulled me into the album. But by the time it gets to this point, number six on the album, I think it is so needed. You know, you've had that really intense, even though some of the songs have dropped down, they've always come back and been quite loud and powerful again. Whereas this one's an absolutely beautiful song. I love the arrangement of it as well. The production is through the roof on this, isn't it? Like I say, you've got strings, bells, whatever they wanted, they got on this. But this is one as well. I think the true test of a song is if you strip all of that away, all of that production, what are you left with? This is why I love the, Unplugged, that series. Yeah. I kind of wish they'd bring that back, although I'm not sure what bands I'd want on it. I just love this song. And for me, this is, I agree with you, Tony, much better than today. I haven't heard this one enough. I can listen to the whole album and listen to this one straight after.
Yeah, no, I hear that. Like I said, and I just think today is infinitely loopable, but this is infinitely playable. Like, I really do think it's a good time. I love an acoustic guitar in the middle of a rock band. And again, I keep bringing it up. One of these days, I'm going to pick the D. But like, I just love what Kyle does with his acoustic guitar in the middle of it. I mean, I just, you know, so what do you think, Max? What do you think about Disarm?
It does stand out. I think it's a nice track. I like the acoustic guitar with sort of orchestration behind it, string section and church bells and real kitchen sink production. Actually,
100%.
It?
Yeah.
It's really layered on. But I think it works really well. No drums on the song whatsoever. He must have been on one of his
on a bender.
When you read the notes, like he would go and disappear for days on end on some bender or something. So maybe the song originally did have drums on it. I don't know. But it's a nice, concise, like dreamscape of a song. You know, it works. Despite myself, I do like this song. Actually, it's quite nice. It reminds me of that song they had a hit with, like a couple of years after that Tonight song. Mm. It's kind of like that with the orchestration, but without the really long snare drum fill that song has all the way through it. So yeah, it does work for me. I can listen to this one quite nicely. It's good stuff.
Nice. And it's on, where this is recorded on the internet, so Sarah can listen back and you can say you liked this, that she was he looks over to the side.
We'll do an alternate version.
We're gonna edit that out.
Going,
yeah.
Shit.
She's like, you said you liked it, we're gonna listen again.
So
I agree, couldn't agree more. So up next, surprising to you guys, probably my favorite song on the album. Is Soma, 639. This is one of the ones co-written by James Iha, guest musician REM's Mike Mills on piano.
Oh wow!
Yeah. And again, this is just because I'm probably a big nerd, but this is a song about Brave New World. This Huxley's Brave New World. That's Soma is the drug they take in there, and I love that book. And there's a lot happening here, and I think it's a really interesting social commentary lyrically about, like, you know, where we were at the time when antidepressants were being overprescribed, and I think antidepressants are like medication people need and should take. We were also like at that stage in the mid '90s where people were like handing it out like candy, and they didn't know what the side effects were. And so I think he's just had, and again, he's going through his own depression, you know, so I just think that it's really layered. And so it's 6:39. Usually I don't really like the long songs, but this one, could go on and on, and I'm quite happy to listen to it. So that's my feeling. Max, am I crazy?
You might be. I don't know. Somas were the drug of choice for pro wrestlers back in the day. They're like a prescription drug for like musculoskeletal pain or something like that.
Really?
So a lot of wrestlers used to, back in the day when wrestling wasn't as clean as it is now, they used to be hopped up on somas to do 300 days a year.
Oh,
on the road,
I didn't know that. Crazy.
Being slammed to the mat, they were popping them like candy. And I think maybe I should take a couple of somas, and I might have got a bit more out of this song than that. I'm not sure. I mean, I like the guitar. I've written here, I really like the guitar solo, which I put is really nice. And I think that is really nice in the song. I think that works really well. I think it's far too long, 6.5 minutes again. I've said it on multiple shows before. If you've got long songs, fill them with interesting bits and pieces and justify that length. Whereas I don't think a 6.5 minute song should be this long for this kind of music. I mean, this kind of laid back kind of, you know, it's just not, I'm not a massive fan of it. It does go on probably again a minute or two longer than it should. But it's inoffensive stuff to listen to. I think it, you know, you can listen to it and just switch your brain off for a minute maybe and just kind of drift with it a bit. That's probably all I have to say about it, really. I don't think it's a great song. I think there's far better on this album than this. I appreciate it's your best song, Tony, so I don't want to
This is the conversation. I was shocked. I was shocked when I was looking back over, you know, you writing your notes, and I was like, I'm actually kind of surprised. I would not have thought that going in, but there was just something about it. And again, age, I'm 50 now, you know, I'm not 22 listening to this. You know, it's like a different thing. I don't know. Maybe I need to take a nap. Dave, break the tie.
The middle ground. So I do think this is a hugely underrated song. Even myself, I don't think of it. If I think about this album, I don't think, oh, I'll stick Summer on. I generally go to other tracks. But I like the way this starts off, and it's almost like a lullaby. It's so tender. It's almost like the tickling the guitar strings. They're not just plucking them or anything. I think it is so... just so laid back, so dreamy. And then you get, I'm not sure if it's about halfway through, because again, I do think this justifies the length, because you've spent all that time in this kind of dreamscape, and then it just almost comes in with a bam, you know, it all comes in, all the band together. And then Corgan's lyrics the melody is the same, but it's so different because you've got all the booming guitars around him. You know, he's screaming the vocals a bit more than whereas he was almost whispering them before. So, yeah, I really like this one. I think this is an underappreciated song.
Nice. Cool. All right. Well, that's, and again, the beauty of this. Up next, track 8, we're just past the, well, I guess we're well past the halfway point. The song that I think, if I were Butch Vig, I would have started the album with this. Geek USA. Love it. I mean, if you're going to write a rock song, this is a fucking rock song. What do you think, Dave? Rock song? I love this song. I think I would have started, it's not my favorite, but I would have started the album with this.
Yeah, I think this is okay. I think this is not one of my favorites, but it's back. You know, you've had the lullaby, and it is very powerful, somber song with Soma before. This one's back up again. You know, it's back to the driving force, you know, the real high intensity song. But the reason I haven't thought too deeply. I just, you told me about it 30 seconds ago, but the idea of starting with this song, I think, yeah, the thing is with Cherub Rock, it is just powerful all the way through. And this one gets to about 2 minutes and it really just drops off. In fact, let me see. I wonder if I can catch it in the right moment. Oh, here we go. You're almost into the dreamscape again. You know, this really kind of changes the tone of it. You've just had this massive, you know, high distortion drive-in force. Then you come down into this again.
Yeah.
minute or so? Or... Now, this is... I can almost see Max gritting his teeth, but this is the thing I love about the alternative type of music as well, is when you got not necessarily the driving force. I see that. I wonder if I can catch it again. Because it's quite ploddy, isn't it? And it's back up again. You get the guitar coming in, you know, a bit of noodling there. So again, just the playing about with the emotions, the different tones that come through and the different styles that are going on there. If you're watching on YouTube, you've got Tony doing almost the Wayne's World Bohemian Rhapsody.
And Max. So Max, what say you?
Well, do you know what? You'll be surprised to hear this is actually my favourite song on the album.
Oh, wow.
It actually is. It actually is. I think it's the most musically interesting song on the album. There's like three sections in there. One either side of like the main section in the middle. And that bit you played where it's slow, I actually really like that breakdown halfway through. It's quite proggy. It's a bit Pink Floyd-y kind of thing, you know. I actually really do quite like that element to it. The musicianship on the song's really good as well. Great drumming again. I keep writing that on all my notes here. I think this is the song that I actually listened to the most, actually found something that sort of piqued my interest a bit more than the rest of it. So yeah, I actually do really like this song, Geek USA. I think it's got more going for it than certainly the four or five songs that we've still to talk about. Jesus, I found some of them fucking hard work. My God, we'll get to that in due course. But I think this song I actually do actually like it. I think there's a lot of interesting bits and pieces in there. And that's the kind of song, that's the kind of music I like. That's got different things going on and whatnot. So yeah, I've only got good things to say about this particular track.
Yeah, nice. That was good. And I'm glad you did that, Dave. Played us through Dave the DJ, because that I do think, you know, it's almost like you think about like, and I don't remember we talked about it before, but you know how like with Extreme, they kind of did it where you write a song that is like the way that old timey musicals used to be, where it's like you get the full, this is the score, and you're going to get little tidbits of what the whole musical is going to be like early on. You're like with the introduction to the thing, and the band AJR does this. They start with an overture of all of their albums, and it's like little clips to their what the songs you're about to hear. So this kind of, the reason I would like it is first, and this is why, because this is telling you what the album's going to be. It's all these things. This is a little tidbit. Now it's its own thing, but like you're going to get this, you're going to get distortion, you're going to get rock, you're going to get soft, you're going to get orchestration. So to me, it's just like a encapsulates what the whole album is, maybe not all together in one song. So anyway, nice. Well, that works out well. So we've agreed Butch Vig is wrong. It should have been track one. Up next is the other song co-written by James Ihan. It's funny, with Soma, you called it a lullaby. Actually, I had that in my notes. But this one is the one that feels like the lullaby, and maybe because of that, this.
Yeah.
So
I actually did put in my notes another lullaby.
Oh, nice. Amazing. Amazing.
So we did join up for that.
We did, yeah. So what about that? Do rock albums need lullabies, Dave?
I think for this rock album, again, is it rock? Is it alternative? Yeah. I agree with what you were saying before. I listen to those little pinched harmonics.
Right there.
It's beautiful. I really, really like this one. And again, when it all kind of comes together in a sec, the band. This is another one that is hugely underrated for me. And not that I bet Max knows more Smashing Pumpkins fans than I do, because I don't tend to talk about them to many people. But so yeah, in the conversations that I have with myself, I'll generally come back to this. So Mayonnaise is one of those tracks that I do think when I come back to the album, I think, oh, I might just skip ahead to this one. And there's something really catchy. I can't quite describe it, but the guitar riff, it's just with the little change that he does there. Do-do-do, I just love it. I think it's so good. And again, it's very much more. I think the ploddy nature, it's a bit more kind of grungy, you know, stare at your feet while you're at the grunge rock club, you know, it's one of those kind of tunes for me. So yeah, another great track. Absolutely love it.
Max, is that why it's called shoegazing? Because you're standing there staring at your feet?
Yeah.
Amazing. I didn't. I. It's all coming together. I never heard that phrase before, and so
Oh,
then
really?
for Dave, that's amazing. Max, what do you think? What do you think of mayonnaise? Oh.
I like mayonnaise. I like mayonnaise on a nice sandwich for my
Not on
lunch.
your
But
chips like the Belgians,
yeah.
no.
I do like mayonnaise on chips. Delicious. But this song, Mayonnaise, there's nothing wrong with it per se. Just again, I think because I'm not a fan of the band and the music as such, I think coming to it cold, it's and not listening to it for 30 years and listening to it a handful of times. It's pleasant, but there's nothing in there that pulled me in and sort of held my attention, so to speak. It does sound like a couple of other tracks on the album, which I think you guys have already alluded to anyway. It's fine, you know, if you listen to it in isolation, it's a fine song, but I just don't think it really walks tall on the selection of songs on this album. I'll leave it there because
Okay. No.
I don't want to shit on it, but it's not, I just, to me, it's just not really a kind of thing I would listen to. It's a bit too maudlin for me, a little bit too introspective, so to speak. But yeah, like I said, there's nothing wrong with it per se.
Sure. Totally fair. All right. Nothing wrong with it per se. I love it.
Yeah. I
Love
think
that.
introspective is a good way to look at this whole album, to be honest. And I can imagine that I would probably not get on with Billy Corgan. However, I think I know him, and I think there's a bit of me in him as well, not in a Jimmy Savile way, but in like a, you
Not
know,
them,
you
not
can
them.
tell he's all up in his head,
Yeah,
you
oh
know,
yeah.
and he's just over agonizing about things, and the reason he probably is, you know, named as producer is because he's so paranoid about letting product out, you know, letting songs out that aren't as good and don't live up to what they've done before. And you know, a lot of the lyrics in this, you know, it talks about his kind of troubled relationships and stuff. So there's something, there's a lot in the lyrics, but I think with this song, there's something about the notes, the tone, the melody that's just really melancholic. And yeah, it really speaks to me, this one. And you can tell because I get to see the number of plays on the
Yeah,
player, and you can
crazy.
tell that it's not just me. There's quite a lot of other people. There's like 10 times as many plays as Geek USA or Space Boy After. So clearly it's a beloved song.
Yeah, no,
I'm
I
glad to say
agree.
I'm not the only one who didn't like
No, I see that. Yeah,
Silverfuck
there's not
very
even
much
a
then.
million.
Looking
Well,
at
we'll get to that in two songs,
those
but let's take a break between Mayonnaise and Silverfuck, which is objectively bad. We'll find out. Dave may prove us wrong, Max. It's funny, the longest song I will have the least to say. Space Boy, though. Look, I love me some singer-songwriter. I honestly, and it's crazy because this is a Smashing Pumpkins song, but that opening riff, I was like, did Sheryl Crow write this? And I'm okay with that. Like, I mean, this is. That's how I feel about this. It feels out of place on the album, but I enjoy it as a song. Like it's so distracting. Now the last two songs are a little bit different too, but like, and maybe the part of the great reorder that I have is move the three last songs together and place them, put move this with the last two. I do like this song a lot. It just feels out of place. It's just such a hard, right, where the other ones, Soma, Disarm, those right turns feel okay, where this has no production. This is underproduced. Where Disarmed, we talk about, like what you said, Max, kitchen sink production. This has no production. This is, we recorded it in the back of a moving truck, and this is what we got. And I'm okay with that, but it's just so, it just feels out of place. I like it as a single. It wasn't a single, but that's how, that's kind of how I feel about it. What do you think, Max?
I actually, I quite like this song, actually. I much prefer it to the last four or five tracks on the album. Much prefer it. It's like a, it's like a shoegazing country song, isn't it? That kind of thing. It's, you know, I like the, I don't know what you call that instrument in the, like the kind of, it's like, is it a mellotron or something? That keyboardy, that keyboard texture that's all the way through it. I like that. It adds a bit of, I know what you said, it's not very produced as such, but adding that on gives a song so much more flavor and so much more depth. So I like it. It's quite relaxing to listen to. And his voice is much easier to handle on this kind of song than it is on some of the others where it's like, oh, fuck it. What a chore to listen to that screech. Whereas I think in this song, I think his voice is really nice to a certain point. It's a really pleasant song to listen to. I just like that mellotron sound. I think you don't hear that very much in music. Really, it reminds, there's that, what's that King Crimson song called now, in the Court of the Crimson King, and that has a lot of that on at the start. It just reminds me of that a little bit, which is never a bad thing in my view. So yeah, I like Space Boy. It's, yeah, thumbs up from me.
Yeah, Dave.
Yeah, I think for me it is quite produced. However, there's a lot of restraint.
Maybe whenever, that's it. Okay.
Yeah, whenever you get strings, I always think that's produced. They've thought they're gonna release this one as a single. Probably it's got all the polish. But what I've actually got in my notes is you could imagine turning up for an open mic night and someone just getting up with their acoustic guitar and playing this one. You know, if this didn't exist on this album, you know, especially the song as well, Space Boy. So I think it's great. I just think it's a very different tone. You know, we've got the plenty of times on the songs before, you've got the kind of non-distorted guitar with the distorted guitar, and you've got lots of effects on there. But this is just stripped right back and just such a lovely tone on that acoustic guitar. I think it sounds great. I'm not sure, I don't think it's a 12 string, but it just sounds so rich on its own. And yeah, I think the lyrics and the melody fit really well. I don't think he's the most naturally gifted singer, but again, for songs like this, it just fits really well. Just that softer voice. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think you said it best, Dave. I think that's probably what I should have said, is it's stripped down. It's not that it's underproduced, but it's that it's like, yeah, there's no, it's such an album full of distortion, and that's taken, that's gone. So that's, it's basics. It's like back to the basics. And so right. Of course, there's strings. You can't do that in the back of a moving truck, but it's just the sound of it was so, or you shouldn't anyway. That's the PSA on Mandatory Music. And see, don't have a string quartet in the back of a moving truck. Yeah, I think it's, I really do think it's a great song. I feel like it belongs on a different album, but that's okay. You know, I mean, this is the album they have. But the song that I think doesn't belong on this or any album, and I'm going to keep it short because I just don't have much to say. Silver Fuck, 8 minutes and 43 seconds. And so it does a lot. There's definitely five or six songs going on in here, but I don't know. This just, I can't. I just don't care for it. And that sound right there, it's like the Ben Folds talked about hitting the brown note that you can play it long enough and some people will shift their pants. I feel like, is that what this is? Is that what he's trying to do? I just can't. It just hits me sonically in the wrong place. Do you know what I'm talking about, Dave? The brown note? Does this make you shit your pants?
I remember seeing it on South Park where they were trying to find the brown note. Yes. See, for me, I think this, I said Mayonnaise was underappreciated, but then we looked at the views. I'm going to say Silverfuck is definitely underappreciated if I look at the number of views, because the start of it for me is almost like Woodstock. You're all at Woodstock and everyone's just going a bit nuts. And, you know, it's almost jazz-like. Everyone, you know, you got your Jimi Hendrix on the guitar there, just belting out some feedback, and the bass and the drums are doing their own thing. But where I think it shines for me is obviously they're just going a bit nuts. You know, they're cutting loose. That's, you know, if I imagine turning up, you know, on a freezing cold Tuesday night. We used to practice up in Preston in the mill, and it was fucking freezing. Just this old industrial mill, and it was always a nightmare. So you'd always want to play something with quite high intensity to get yourself going initially. So I can kind of get where that song might have come from, but for me, this is the best bit of the song. This goes for 3 or 4 minutes where it's just really interesting textured sounds that are going on. And like I say, you're just almost tickling the guitar strings there, you know, and it brings it right down. And again, I'm sure it's for about 3 or 4 minutes or something until it comes back. And it's all, they do that effect. I do it a lot in horror movies, you know, where they reverse the vocal. They reverse the vocal in the studio, so it kind of gives this interesting sound to like give you a blast, you know, when a
Right,
ghost
because it's
is
something
about
you
to jump up at
you
you.
recognize it is human, but it's distorted, so it tricks your brain. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
let me see if I can find where it is. This is it. It almost gets a little bit Grudge or The Ring or something like that. See what I mean? See that kind of scream the way it comes up. So yeah, there you go. There's my defense, Your Honor. I'm sticking to
All right, Max, you be the judge
it.
this time. So we're a split. What say you, Max?
I can't get into this song, though. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Get off the
I mean,
fence, Max. Come on, I
yeah.
give my best defense there. I knew what was coming,
I mean,
It's like
it's, you know,
overruled. We're
it,
done
yeah.
with
it. I mean, you know, I'm not disagreeing with anything Dave says, but for me, I just can't get into it. It's for what's in the song, it's far too long. I mean, at 20 seconds short of 9 minutes, it's a bit too overindulgent for me. And when it slows down to that snail's pace and nothing happens for ages, I know what you're saying about, you know, there's sort of different textures and tickling the guitar strings and what have you. But I don't know. They just needed to be, for me anyway, they needed to be something more in there to justify 9 minutes. I think that song needs some heavy hard cuts to it, some heavy editing. No, I just can't get into it. I don't think it's a song I would ever cross paths with again, if I could help it anyway. It's just not, no, I just can't get into Silver Fork. I'm so sorry.
If he met it on the street, he would curb stomp it. That's what we hear. Okay, that's how he feels. No, this is the joy. This is the joy of the we talk, we disagree. It's all okay. I feel the same way, but I honestly think Dave mounted a very brave defense. I think it was valid. And we'll
Oh yeah,
let
well,
the
of course it's valid.
of course,
It's
and
all valid.
beautiful.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
right.
art. It's all subjective, you know. So
Exactly.
whatever you think, you know. I mean, I don't know about there being the brown notes in the song, but it was that long. I needed a shit by the time I finished listening to it. It didn't make me have a shit, but I needed one at
You
the
needed
end.
one. All right, it
I
just
needed one at the
tightened
end
you right up.
around
Okay, fair enough. It's the constipation note instead of the brown
time.
note.
Yeah, but
Nice.
yeah,
Okay.
it's all good. Yeah.
All right. Well, and then now for something completely different. From 8:43 to 1:38. Sweet, sweet. Max, is it sweet, sweet? Is it just one sweet?
It's short and sweet, I'll give it
Yeah.
that. It's a nice little, after that, the overkill of the previous song, it's actually quite a nice little palate cleanser, a nice little musical interlude. But that's what that's for me, excuse me, that's all it is, a musical interlude. It feels like an unfinished idea that they didn't quite, that they had there for where there's the bones of a song, 1.5 minutes long, but they didn't flesh it out into a living, breathing, full, like, you know, 3 minute song. It's totally inoffensive, and I think, you know, it works as something just little to listen to after the overkill of the previous song. So I don't mind it at all for that very reason.
That's totally fair. That's totally fair. This is the one I would move to the end of the album. And I would actually move. I would dump Silverfuck. Sorry, Dave. I would have Geek USA be one, and then move Rocket to fourth to the last, and then do Rocket, Space Boy, Luna, Sweet Sweet. That tells a nice little story. That's how, in my head, that's how I would do it. So to me, I really love Sweet Sweet. I agree with you. It's like a coda, right, Max? It's not a finished. It's not a finished song. So I like it. I don't think, I just think it's wrongly placed. So Dave, tell me why I'm wrong.
I think that's fair, actually, about where it is placed on the album. I'll say that for this one track. It is like a palate cleanser. It is like that unfinished song, but it's weird, isn't it? You've just had this massive, you know, nearly 9 minute song. And then it's like, we'll throw this other little one right next to it. It strikes me as odd, but, you know, we've said on previous albums as well, like, it's good when bands are being brave. You know, it's not just that they're reproducing the same song. Never actually listened to a Stiltskin album, but I imagine that's all trying to recreate that one hit wonder that they had. But yeah, I don't really have a great deal more to say about it. It's just that nice little song. It doesn't necessarily, apart from Corgan's vocals, if I hadn't heard this album and just heard the music, I'm not sure I'd place it as a Smashing Pumpkins song. I think this could be any kind of random rock band just playing about. But yeah, whereas most of the other things, you know, the music, even without the vocals, is distinctively the band for me. But yeah, this one stands out a little bit that it doesn't fit that mold.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. Yeah, to me, the reason I put it last is it's almost like, as the palate cleanser, if you're going to have it after Silverfuck is the place, if you're going to, you know, that's without a doubt. So yeah, anyway, all agreed. So we're at the final track, which I would have, again, moved to the penultimate track. I really dig it. It's called Luna. I get why it ends the album. But again, I think Sweet Sweet's a coda to it. I like the wow, wow. Dave says, Dave, tell us about the wow, wow. What is happening there?
Again, just these tiny little intricate sounds in the back that, you know, if you're just listening, again, when I'm blasting down the M56 back in the day, I didn't really notice some of these softer elements to it, but it's those things that you pick up when you're listening on your headphones. And, you know, obviously that I was saying about Corgan getting all up in his head, but I can well imagine though there were many late nights and early hours of the morning just agonizing over the tone of these little tiny guitar pieces. So I think it literally says in the first line, doesn't it? One more song. So I guess kind of has to finish the album in that context. But this sort of sits there. I wouldn't say it's quite as good as Disarm, but it's of that same tone, isn't it? Just a very pleasant song. And again, I think his vocals, you know, fit really nicely with that. So, yeah, for me, a nice way to finish the album. But, yeah, again, I'm biased.
Yeah. Max, how do they end? How does it come to an end? Do they land on their feet or do they crash and burn?
Neither. I think it's a nice enough. I think it's a nice enough song.
They just walk out. They walk out and don't slam the door. They're just like whatever.
It's a nice enough song. Yeah, but I don't know. Personally, I would have liked something a little bit bigger to close the album. I like albums that end with something big and finish with something big. But it's perfectly fine. The song itself, it's quite nice. That song sound you're on about before, that wow, it sounds a little bit sort of almost Egyptian, kind of, you know, maybe I'm imagining it, but I kind of got that kind of Egyptian sound. It's okay, and it doesn't really expand on the whole like the I'm in love with you refrain that he keeps repeating throughout the song. I get it, it's supposed to be a, you know, I guess a romantic ballad, I guess, for some chick called Luna or something, I don't know. It's okay. Again, it's just a little 3 minute ditty, but nothing special, but nothing bad.
Nothing bad. Okay. Well, there you go. Nothing bad. It didn't end with a whimper or a bang and or a wet fart. It just ended. And at least it didn't slam the door on the way out like you angry teenagers. We've all been there. So we're here at the end where we're going to rank our album. That was delightful, lads. It's always good to do this. I love music so much. It makes me so happy. I can't imagine even the stuff, even going back to when we did the Foo Fighters, which was a slog, it was a joy to do with you guys. So if you're new, if you're a big Pumpkinhead and you're here for this and you don't know, Max, did you know that the Canon Canon's Frank Garcia Hale has a Smashing Pumpkins podcast? He's a big Pumpkinhead, which is a thing I'm making up right now. I don't know that that's what they're called. Pumpkinhead, also a horror movie. I'm bringing it all together. So if you think this is the greatest album. Yeah, for sure. If you think this is top of the pops, one of the greatest things ever, it goes to Paradise City. If you think it's very good, but not perfect, it goes to Dr. Feelgood. If you think it's so-so, it's at the crossroads with Bon Jovi and or Ralph Macchio. If you think it's on the downside, sliding, it goes to Skid Row. If you think it's the worst album you've ever heard, it goes to Hotel California, where it can check out anytime it likes, but it can never leave. And so, Max, you go first. We'll have Dave go last because it was his pick. Max, where do you put Siamese Dream?
It would be very easy for me to score it low, but I'm going to be nice and especially kind to my friend Dave, and I'm going to give it 3 out of 5. So that's Crossroads. I mean, what can I say? It's not my thing, but I've always tried to be at least constructive with my analysis. This music is the absolute sort of antithesis of anything I would listen to, to say the least. But I can recognise that there are moments of real quality in there for sure. I mean, the musicianship in the band is above the standard of other bands in this genre, as far as I'm concerned. You know, they ain't bar chord bashers, that's for sure. I mean, this is high quality musicianship throughout, and you can't argue with the success of it either. It's just not particularly my bag, but I recognize it's many people's bags, and I think for the style of music, I think it's obviously a high watermark, so I will go with a very firm Crossroads on it.
Nice. That's amazing. Okay. Well, for me, I'm gonna go just slightly above that. I don't know if it's all the way a feel good, because I just don't like Silverfuck. I don't like a couple. I think there are some, I believe the word was self-indulgent in a few places. Honestly, having seen them live, I'm obviously a fan. I've seen them several times. They got progressively worse and more self-indulgent in their live shows, which is part of the problem. But I honestly, if this were a live album, I would rank it higher. Like it's early early stuff when they were just like a band trying so hard, and you can hear it. You can hear this, like you said, the skill. This is a skilled band. James Iha, by the way, is an amazing guitarist. When we finally sit around to do our great lead guitarist off, he's going to come in on the people we've covered. I think he's exceptional. And he writes, like, he's done so much work with other bands he produces. He and Adam Schlesinger from Fountains of Wayne and Taylor Hansen from Hansen and Carlos from the drummer from Cheap Trick did a pop album called Tinted Windows, which is exceptional. And it's like they are all like writing these big swingy pop songs. It's so much fun. He's so talented. So there's so much good. Darcy is a great player. Jimmy Chamberlain, undoubtedly, Max, I'm with you. The talent of the band. Like, I mean, Billy Corgan's phenomenal. Writing mean-ass songs, but what a drummer. Like, I mean, yeah. I put him up there. He's Alex Van Halen good. So it's a 3.5. Yeah. It's Crossroads. It's looking at Dr. Feelgood. And some of the songs, four of the songs are like almost Paradise City. So I can't, that's where I stand. So David, you sent us a gift this week of you getting ready to defend yourself as the sole Spartan. And we did not come in hot. You took it better than I did last week with Weezer. And Mike, who I invited to defend me, totally shit on me for an hour. Anyway.
Mike slated the first half of the album more than any of us.
I know. Anyway, Dave, give us our final ranking, sir.
But no, so for me, it just hits differently. Like I say, more than any of the other Smashing Pumpkins albums. And actually, as you were talking there, I was thinking, I wonder if there's another band who hates the rest of their genre as much as this band, you know, because they don't identify really as alternative. And a lot of their music, especially early on, they said, well, we created this music because we were sick of hearing all the other stuff. You know, we didn't like what we were hearing. So whereas, you know, it's a different way of looking at it. A lot of other bands will say, oh, we used to love these bands, and so we wanted to do our own stuff. But yeah, for me, it's a Paradise City. I think I genuinely feel like there isn't a filler track. You know, I feel like everything. I can see what you're saying, Tony, about maybe, you know, swapping around. And the more I think about it, Sweet Sweet, yeah, I could definitely go with that just being the end of the album, just because it's so different, isn't it? Sometimes you throw that last track on there.
It's Her Majesty on Abbey Road.
Yeah.
That's what I feel. Yeah.
Yeah, I could definitely go for that. But I definitely Paradise City for me all the way.
Amazing. Well, that was good. That was, I'm glad we did it. Max, I thought Max was for sure sending it to Skid Row. So
I thought it was Hotel California.
No, there's no way. There's no way Max could objectively think this is worse than One by One. So where does this come in, Dave, on the great list?
So this one comes in joint with Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast, which is possibly sacrilege for Max there, at seventh, and also Extreme's Porno Graffiti as well. So we still have at the top, we have Appetite for this Destruction by Guns N' Roses. We have second, Paranoid by Black Sabbath, Master of Puppets, Metallica third, joint with The Real Thing, Faith No More. And then you've got Skid Row, and Dirt, Alice in Chains coming in at joint fifth there.
Amazing.
It's a respectable position.
Yeah, and as we get towards the end of the year, folks, we're gonna each take of the bands we've covered, not in general, just of bands we've covered, we're gonna rank. We'll do like a bonus episode where we pick our top five guitarists of their top whatever, and we'll have that discussion. So,
I was hoping our bonus would be our Avedon picks.
Well, we could definitely do that too. I have one in my pocket. And it involves one of my favorite singer-songwriters, Ben Folds, although he's not on the album. He produces the album. So I've got an Avedon when you're ready.
What about an idea? So for the great tracks, they deserve the respect. Great album, sorry. You know, each track we go through. I'm just wondering, do we all maybe pick an Avedon pick and then go through like three albums in
album.
One episode?
Oh, yeah. As a bonus, sure. Yeah, we could not next though, because I'm really keen for this next one. Okay, yeah.
Just thinking out loud,
no,
you know, we
I
can discuss it offline as well. But all bring our Avedon picks.
I love that. I think we could do that as a bonus. So we'll get, yeah. What do you think, Max?
I'm all in. Yeah, let's do
three
it.
Avedons. And yeah, oh man.
I think me and Max might pick the same Sheffield band though.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
Were they Sheffield or I'm thinking Black Lace?
Amazing. Okay, well, that'll be
somewhere around there.
That'll be fun. Those will be fun, and those will be bonus episodes. And you know, maybe this summer when time's a little easier for us, that would be a good time. Okay, well, with that in mind, Max knows his pick. Mm-hmm. He's here to release it to the universe, and maybe, since I know what it is already, the person who appears on this might show up on that top five guitar list. Max Byrne, take it away.
One of the most iconic and recognizable and universally adored guitar players plays in this band. So we're going from alternative rock to dad rock right now. So we're going back from 93, we're going back to 1986 now for this new album. And this is an album by a universally adored band who everybody loves the world over, and a band that's a British institution. But this album, as much as I love it, has moments of real high quality. It also has some of the worst fucking songs this band ever have recorded. So we'll have some fun with this pick. And it also connects strongly through many songs being featured in a film that is dear to all of our hearts. And we all have a little impression in our back pockets. And that film is the classic science fiction movie Highlander. And the album by Queen is A Kind of Magic.
Come on, Dave, do it. Tell us how many there can be.
Sorry, I was trying to guess what Max's pick was going to be, and I was going to play it, and then I was thinking, Oh, is it Dire Straits? Is it Pink
Oh.
Floyd? And so, no, I've got to do it, haven't I? There can be only one.
Amazing. I can't wait for that. Yeah, there are some high highs and some low lows, and one of my top three Queen songs appears on that album. It is not my favorite Queen record, but I am excited to revisit it. So guys, thank you for Siamese Dreaming. Join us in a month. Join us in May. It will be Brian May May. So that works out even better. And we'll all put on our Jufros and rock out like nobody's business. So for Dave and Max, I'm Tony. Thank you for listening to Mandatory Music and CD, and we will see you all in a month. Bye.